Right now, we've got one of our Arts Weekend interviews. I've got Lucy Galbraith in the studio. Morning, Lucy.
Morning.
So you're exhibiting at Raglan Arts Weekends. Where are you exhibiting?
I'm down at Chris Meek's studio down, I think it's 21 Cross Street.
Look for a place that looks interesting.
Yeah, a bit of a junkyard.
Yeah. Enhanced junkyard.
Yeah.
Down there. So are there several other artists going to be aside from Chris down there?
Yeah, there's Anique, who does taxidermy, mm-hmm. and she's brilliant. Well, they're all brilliant, really. And Karen, who's just had an exhibition. She does ceramic work.
Yeah.
And Chris, okay. And myself.
So that's four. That's pretty good to stop off there.
Yeah.
So how do you describe yourself as an artist? You're a painter?
Yeah, I'm a painter. Mostly. All I do really is painting. I'm trying to figure out how to describe my work.
Well, we're on the radio, so you have to give us a complete understanding of what it looks like.
it's sort of changes a lot, but there's a fair bit of realism, a bit of pop art, and maybe some abstract, but not heaps. I just tend to focus on I guess a lot of nostalgic things and memories. So I've gone from, I used to do pet portraits, so I've got a lot of dogs on there and kind of started doing some pig dogs and then moved to cars. I painted my Corolla. And then that's kind of opened up to more boganistic themes, which is kind of my interest growing up on the West Coast.
Yeah, I was given the phrase bogan chic to describe what you do by Nikki, who's running the Arts Weekend. Do you think that's a fair description?
I think so. I mean, it's always transitioning into other things, but it's that kind of area is about unlocking the hidden femininity that is in boganism. It's quite squashed down.
People would say it's pretty well hidden.
It's pretty well hidden, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
That's interesting. That's not what I was expecting.
Yeah.
So, all right, let's look, because you've got, on your website, you've got a page described as whips, which is cars, some of which are run down, and some of which are, what's a whip? Is that when you're spinning out?
I think a whip is just another term for a car, isn't it? You know, getting your whip, I think it's quite an old school
thing. I'm not the bogan expert here, so I don't know.
I don't even know if it's a bogan term. I'm also not a car expert at all. I know barely anything about them. I just had a kind of pretty crappy Corolla and painted it. And
is that this one here, the Corolla Sprinter? One. That looks like a 90s car.
It was definitely old. Yeah.
But then you've got like a real classic, bogan classic, a Mazda RX-3.
Yeah, well, it unlocked the bogan, I guess, bogan depths of my heart when I painted that, and it just led into other things.
And there's like a 1970s Plymouth Barracuda, which looks like a wreck.
Yeah,
actually another abandoned car, a Mustang.
Yeah, I found those images. If you Google cars and barns, there's a lot.
Oh yeah,
a lot of discarded cars and incredible cars that have been just left to rot, which is also really interesting.
And you've chosen, like, you've painted the car on a fairly abstract background, very kind of minimalist. Was that your plan, or did it just you start painting and that's what felt right?
I didn't really plan it. It just kind of is what happens. I don't often paint intricate backgrounds. I'm not really into backgrounds. I'm more into the main focus image, I guess.
Okay. Yeah. So, and you're a self-taught painter.
I am, yeah.
So how did that start, if you're self-taught?
I think I was just born with it. It's a bit of a curse. self-taught. I dabbled in painting at college, so there was a bit there, and I definitely picked up that I liked it and did sketching and things like that and realised that I was actually all right at it. After school, I tried to go to art school for a bit and didn't last very long. I was a bit scared, to be honest. I was scared of how much the school was costing and whether I was making the right decision and all of those things. Because all through youth, I was told that being an artist doesn't make any money. Don't do that. There's too many artists out there. So I just avoided it until, forever. But I just continued to do my own practice on the side of all the other jobs that I did. And it was only really last year, I think it was, that I decided to go full-time as an artist.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what had you been doing leading up to that decision? Because I think you'd been doing portraits for dogs or something like... Or by request? Is that part of the unplanned evolution of your art?
Sort of. I don't know. That was kind of my dad's idea when I was a bit younger, because I loved dogs and I loved painting, and it was his business idea. I was just kind of useless at keeping it going and the self-promotion and things like that. So I sort of dropped it, I guess, but still kept doing it, and people just... How did it even happen? I guess a couple of people asked me to paint their dogs, and I sort of went from there.
Yeah, and I'm looking on your website again. There was a dog that I know, Putty Putty, who used to belong to Rick and Liz, and we got one of her puppies. And I immediately recognised her, and I recognised her because I'd seen the work.
Yeah, so, cool.
Awesome. So there is, I mean, people have such a strong emotional attachment to their pets that you probably can't really go wrong unless you really mess it up.
Well, you kind of can, like, and this is why I will never paint people's children again. I had one instance where I painted someone's kids that I'd never met, and it didn't look like them because I had never met them, but I had met Putty, and I love Putty. So it's kind of, if you can capture the spirit or the soul of a living thing, it's pretty magic, and I guess I can kind of do that with dogs, especially ones I know.
Yeah, so but you can't do it from a photo necessarily.
Not necessarily, no. I mean, it's better to know the creature because they just have their own personalities. Like that painting I did of Putty, like, that's just the face of loyalty and love, isn't it? And that's kind of what she was like.
Yeah, and you can and our puppy who we got from her seemed to have the same face as well.
Oh, really?
Which is probably not surprising, the dog's mother, but... So I recognise instantly. What about the cars? Do they have their own personality?
They do, I guess. They do. I mean, the first one, the Corolla, is... I mean, they're all pretty punk, I guess, in a sense.
Yeah.
Some of them are a little arrogant. I think that Mazda looks quite arrogant, doesn't it?
The RX-3.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's tremendous.
Yeah. But I don't know. The other ones are just a little bit rotty and forgotten.
And that goes with the nostalgia thing that...
Yeah,
that's
the interesting thing. That kind of unlocked hole and where I am at now with my painting is I'm kind of going into nostalgia. I guess painting the cars kind of led into the boganism, and then thinking more about boganism, I started thinking about just like little trinkets and spells and rituals and things that kind of are within that culture, like little ornaments that are sitting on your shelf or, you know, like, mink blankets, for example, that you get from the warehouse. They've been in a lot of bogan settings that I've been in growing up. So I guess I painted a couple of things within that realm. A glass dolphin is one thing. And that sort of unlocked this whole area of my youth that I'd kind of forgotten about, which was, I guess, that weird sort of raw age where you're still really young and innocent, but you're kind of picking and choosing how to break that, and you're getting pushed into different areas, and you're witnessing a lot of scary things or mind-changing things, and it's, I guess, shaping your development, but you've got no idea that it is at the time. You just think that you're just trying to be cool or trying to fit in.
Yeah, right, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, it's an ongoing evolution, this whole boganism. There's a lot to it. It's very deep.
So I'm discovering. So would you describe yourself as a bogan?
I can be at times for sure.
You can be at times for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you met, there's a local band of three women who wrote a song called Beach Bay Bogan. I can't even remember their names at the moment. But there is. We should play it after this interview.
It sounds like a great song.
It is. Yeah, yeah, it is. And it's kind of punky, like you'd expect. Yeah,
yeah, it sounds right up my alley.
Yeah, if I can dig it out quickly at the end of the interview, we'll play it.
Cool.
So you were saying to me off the air that you were talking to, a friend who's a bit academic about, and boganism as a,
well, he's
as a subject of study now.
he's a local artist as well, although I don't think he's practicing at the moment. You'll be familiar with his work because he's got some things up at Extreme. Simon Blanchette, I think you say his last name. He's helped me curate my exhibition. I asked him this morning, how would I explain my work? And he said, you know, boganism is a real thing. He met someone once that did a thesis on boganism. So it's quite a subject, I guess.
I guess it's working class culture, so by that definition it gets sneered at and frowned upon by people in different classes, and we like to think we don't have any class system in New Zealand, but we kind of do.
We do, and it's, yeah, that's largely what intrigues me. I think the lower socioeconomic, which is kind of where I was growing up around in Kapiti.
Yeah.
So it's the lower socioeconomic, and I mean, again, with the trinkets and ornaments and things, it's like those items hold so much value to people of what you'd call working class. But when you put them in a fine art setting, it kind of brings a value back to them because they're normally cheap objects or discarded things. It's, yeah.
But they have meaning. And the cost is just the cost, but there's some meaning there.
Yeah. And it's an interesting thought as to what adds value. And, you know, if it's a thing owned by a really wealthy person, is it more value because they have way more things and it probably doesn't mean so much to them?
So art is normally bought by wealthy people or relatively wealthy people, possibly less so by Bogans. Who is purchasing your art?
At the moment, I don't know. It's gaining a lot of interest from all sorts of different groups of people. It's, I guess, because I am drawing on youthful themes and things that have been in New Zealanders' childhood, it attracts everyone from like today's youth to my age group, which is, you know, 30s, and then adults, older. I don't know.
You're not an adult if you're 30?
No, I'm not an adult. That's why I'm in Raglan.
there's youth, there's 30s, and then there's adults. That's what I got from your categorization there.
Yeah, I'm finding adulthood hard. I'm trying to avoid it.
Well. Yeah, probably like a lot of things that seem that'll just creep up on you and you'll discover you're there one day.
Yeah, it kind of has, but I'm just ignoring that.
Yeah, so the what are you doing next? Because have you got, like, I'm looking at art on your website. But that's not it. That's not all, right?
No.
So what have you been doing lately? What will people see at the exhibition?
Well, there are some things that are on my website that will be there, but I've just been really honing in on the nostalgic items. So I've just done a painting of a Bic lighter, which is...
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's pretty interesting. It's cool. It's not just any old Bic lighter. It's a well-used one. There's a unicorn, which is like a unicorn statue that's been painted onto a canvas. And I'm also still dabbling in cowboys. I went up north to Kaitaia a long time ago. Maybe a few years ago, actually, not that long ago, and saw the rodeo up there, and that was a very good case of the femininity held, like, hidden in Boganism, because cowboys are kind of, you know, they can be associated with quite feminine themes. But up there it's sort of squashed out, and it was just, I don't really know how to explain it on air, but it was a brilliant, brilliant thing to see. And so, yeah, I'm doing some more cowboys. There's a cowboy, which is my latest piece, that will be there.
So is it something to do with the horse? Because usually, well, there's more women and more girls that like horses.
It's more to do with the chaps.
Not the guys, but you actually mean the chaps, the clothing
Not
item.
Not the chaps, but like just that whole sort of area of, I guess, the fashion, the mannerisms, it's all very masculine, but you put it in other contexts, which cowboys often are in other contexts, and it becomes quite feminine. It's hard to explain.
I guess one of the characters in the YMCA song.
That's what I'm getting at, yeah.
Right, yeah. Yeah, so the gay community's immediately gravitated toward that. Is that sort of...
I just wasn't quite sure how to put that in words on air and not upset people, but yeah, that's kind of what it is.
Well, we'll leave it. That happened in the 70s, so we can just refer to that.
Yeah, okay, good.
But, okay, well, it's interesting that you see that there. I don't think many people would see that. Some people might be a little confused and say, what, there's feminism in the rodeo? Like, or not feminism, but
I'm trying to bring feminist, the feminism to the rodeo.
Feminist qualities?
Yeah, I guess so.
Or feminine qualities?
I think it's just more because they're so aggressively not feminine. And, you know, when I was up north, I my partner of the time, who was an artist and he was a little bit effeminate, he used to get teased for being gay or whatever he was.
Yeah.
And I just thought it's such a funny thing that would happen up there when there are so many, you know, what you could call gay things going on that aren't necessarily gay. They're considered masculine, like the rodeo. It's an odd place.
I had a friend at school who was Dutch, and he'd been in the country for a few years, but Dutch men were more, at least then, were more effeminate than Kiwi guys. And he got a lot of hassles. And of course, Rotorua is kind of a Bogan Central kind of area in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
I felt like at the time we all had mullets and things like that. Is a mullet a Bogan haircut?
Oh, yeah.
I'm thinking. So he got a lot of hassles for, he was definitely straight, but because he was slightly effeminate. And it was only slightly.
Oh, I know, like,
yeah.
I mean, I don't know what it is in Australia and New Zealand, but we've got this real masculine obsession.
Yeah, we're terrified of not appearing masculine.
Yeah, or just not fitting into a sort of category, I guess. People want to be categorized.
But have you seen like the teenage boys now? They're not as bothered by that.
No, it's brilliant.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of acceptance in schools now. It's really cool. Really cool.
Maybe it's just out here, but I think it's probably elsewhere as well.
Yeah, I think in Kapiti it's a bit like that as well. I had a friend who is transgender and went through that process at school, and it was incredibly hard for them. But I do know, because they're a fair bit younger than me, that it was much easier than if I was at school and trying to do that. And I think it's just, it's getting more and more easy for people to be what they identify as or feel inside.
Yeah, I was at school in the 80s and there weren't a lot of options.
No.
Yeah, and I have friends from back then who were gay who we had no idea at the time. There was no way they were coming out then.
No. I mean, and if they did, they would have got conversion therapy or something archaic like that.
Or just beaten up.
Really badly beaten up.
Yeah, for sure. So, yeah, that has changed. So it intrigues me that you've seen all these feminine qualities, or deliberately buried, right?
Deliberately buried.
And so what you see on the outside is the sign that it's buried, I guess, like the hyper-masculine.
I guess so. I it's all pretty tongue-in-cheek. It's something that humours me, I think. But, yeah.
Okay.
It is hyper-masculine. That's a good word for it.
Yeah. And the cars, I think people can relate to the cars, because we all had that experience of learning to drive and driving our first cars, and our mate, there's always that one mate who was obsessed with their car, and you'd get in it and they'd scare you to death by the way you drove and they drove. And yeah, so I think that's very much relatable. Are you doing more cars?
I will be, they're quite fun to do, but I'm just having a bit of a break from it at the moment, just because I am caught up on this nostalgia thing. But I just dabble in all sorts of areas. I get bored easily and then go back to something else or
What you should be doing as an artist. You shouldn't do a painting that bores you, should you?
No, it's terrible. It never works out.
Yeah. I think that's the thing. I think we get accused of, I don't know, when we're young, of basically following our interests.
Mm.
And I can't see how you could do art unless you're following your interests.
Well, exactly. I mean, that's been quite an interesting transition as well, because for so long, I mean, it's tied into the fear of becoming an artist. Was I just wanted to paint what people wanted. I wanted to get that acclaim, and I wanted to be noticed and applauded. And now I don't care so much at all. I'm kind of being truer to what interests me, and I'm painting better, I think, than I was before, and it's way more interesting.
It would free you up.
Oh yeah,
a lot.
Yeah,
yeah.
Definitely.
I don't know how you can do anything creative when you're worried about what other people are going to think about it.
I think all creatives kind of worry to an extent.
Well, you would, but then you've got to get in the zone, right, and just paint.
Yeah. I mean, it does destroy it, especially with, you know, this whole social media world where everything's online and you feel like you have to put everything online all of the time. It's like when you're creating, it's like you're already at the end kind of thing. You're already at the end result.
Yeah.
You forget that the process is actually the beautiful part of it, if that makes sense.
So you didn't get into painting because you liked marketing?
No.
Is that a struggle? How much of a struggle is that? I mean, the Arts Weekend must make things a little easier.
It's really hard, self-marketing. I mean, I worked in advertising for 4 or 5 years
Okay.
As a copywriter, but that's different. When you're talking about someone else, it's easy. But when you're talking about yourself, it's scary and
so are the words
vulnerable.
On your website, are they your words?
They are. They're probably about to change, though. I did get a little bit of help from Dad because I was like, oh, I don't know how to explain myself. But yeah, that's probably going to change and evolve.
Yeah, well, it sounds like it will because you're just following whatever intrigues you.
Yeah, and it changes a lot. So,
so folks, we're talking to Lucy Galbraith, who's one of the 60 or so artists exhibiting at the Arts Weekend this weekend. Is this the first time?
Last year, I did do an exhibition with Fleur around the Arts Weekend, and it was at Rangatahi.
Fleur was in here for an interview a couple of days ago.
Beautiful Fleur. So we did that last year, but it wasn't actually on the official bill, whereas both of us are in it this year. And
yeah, last year was tricky because it took 2 years for that one to happen.
Oh, yeah.
With all the kept getting hit by lockdowns. So by that point, there were lots of people who wanted to exhibit who just couldn't get on board because the train had left the station 2 years ago.
I was actually lucky to be part of Sam Mathers did an exhibition. It was meant to be for the Arts Weekend, which got delayed further because of COVID. So he just thought he was just going to put the exhibition on anyway, and so he had asked me quite a while ago if I wanted to put some pieces in. I don't know, he might have had a couple of beers, but I nagged him this time and he let me, so good.
There are some similarities between his work and your work?
I guess so, in ways.
I'm looking at a picture here of there's a dog in a car and a Waikato Draft label. That style looks kind of like the sort of thing he does.
It's a style that's kind of been done by a few artists. I don't even know what the term is for it.
There's a pop quality to it.
He
might bristle at that, though. I don't know. Need to ask him.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if he'd grizzle. He'd be fine with it, I'm sure. I mean, if you look at the older artists like Basquiat and, I mean, he was part of the factory with Andy Warhol. He does that kind of style, and there's a lot of artists these days that do dabble in that sort of abstracty pop art iconography sort of world. So, I mean, we definitely draw inspiration from each other, and there was thoughts of Sam doing that when I was doing that painting, you know, some of his techniques. But, yeah, I guess our work does work together, but it is quite different at the same time.
Now I'm just going to have to open up a program because I want to play Beach Bay Bogan, and I think I can only access it. Oh, I've got to log in. This is going to be a painful process. I have to get you to run the radio station while I do this.
Okay, sure. I've got no idea what I'm doing.
No, that's completely unfair. But I'm interested in, like, a lot of stuff we've talked about but haven't got round to is just about creativity. It feels like you might have better access to your creativity since you stopped worrying so much about what other people are going to think
completely.
About the art.
That's tied in with actually leaving my 9-to-5 and getting involved with art and allowing myself to be a bit daydreamy and weird. I got a lot of teasing at school for being weird, but I'm owning it now because I think that's just what artists are. They're a little bit weird. They think a lot.
Someone wrote an article about Raglan called Keeping Raglan Weird or something like that.
I remember that.
Yeah, and I thought they really got it.
Yeah.
There's someone outside. Yeah. Okay, I found the song.
Brilliant.
So Beach Bay Bogan by Five Girls, which is three women. And we've been talking to Lucy Galbraith, going to be exhibiting at Studio Gallery down, we think it's 21 Cross Street. You can't miss it anyway. And it's where Chris Meek has been based for a long, long time. And I hope you have a good weekend, Lucy.